This is a Radioactive special for June 29th, 2006. Today we look at international networking and resistance to gold mining in El Salvador, in the region where WERU's sister station, Radio Sampul, operates. The gold mining industry has left a path of dramatic environmental destruction and human rights abuses around the world. The use of cyanide in processing has produced vast amounts of toxic waste and water pollution through accidents and procedural use. Operations displace communities, and communities that resist are often met with repressive violence from the militaries or state security enforcing the projects of gold mining companies. Because of its growing bad reputation, the gold mining industry has attempted to paint their projects as supported by local communities and to assure shareholders that their investments are stable. As global operations continue, over 50 licenses have been acquired to explore and exploit northern El Salvador, specifically the Department of Chalatenango. It is in this region that Bangor, Maine's sister community Carrasque lies, as well as WERU's sister station, Radio Sampul, in Guajira. O. Martinique Silver is the company engaged in initial operations. Opposition to the projects is strong in Chalatenango's rural communities, already actively organized since the war. Communities are engaged in a massive campaign of education, civic organization, and direct action. On three separate occasions, a spontaneous demonstration in Guajira has blocked mining company representatives and workers from entry into the community. Earlier this June, communities engaged in a national week against mining in the country. Because of previous relationships and new networks, the issue of community resistance to gold mining has expanded internationally. Springboarding off the U.S. El Salvador Sister Cities organization, groups and individuals from around the country have formed a committee task force to address the gold mining influx in concert with the organized communities of El Salvador. On June 9th, networking internationally and internally in the U.S. resulted in a protest action at O. Martinique's shareholder meeting in Morrison, Colorado, outside of Denver. The committee was able to reach out to groups involved in mining opposition in Colorado to picket the meeting, publicize it in the press, and attempt to enter the meeting with shareholder proxy certification. CEO and chairman of O. Martinique's board, Jeffrey Klenda, personally refused their entry. Today we talk with a cross-section of people involved in the international efforts, from Maine, Colorado, El Salvador, and a member of the committee who has long studied the effects of mining globally. We will intersperse these interviews with reports written from El Salvador on community action there. We start by looking at the Salvadoran's history of struggle and organization. Dennis Chinoy is with U.S. El Salvador Sister Cities and with PICA, Peace Through Inter-American Community Action, in Bangor. These groups have spearheaded the formation of the International Mining Committee. Dennis Chinoy has traveled to El Salvador several times over the past 15 years. Can you talk with us about the history of the sister city relationships with the communities in El Salvador and how that began and what was involved?
The U.S. El Salvador Sister Cities Network was an organization that was born in the mid to late 1980s, and it was established in response to a need from Salvadoran communities at risk. At the time, the risk they incurred was risk of rampant human rights violations. Risk to civilians being wounded and killed by the Salvadoran military, subsidized at that time by the U.S. government. So it was out of a sense of complicity and concern that in the United States, communities got together and through the intervention of this network were able to be sistered with a number of communities in the United States, with a number of communities in El Salvador. And the reason that was useful was because it mattered at the time to the Salvadoran government and Salvadoran military, which was dependent on U.S. Government largesse for military and economic aid to the tune of about $1 million a day. It mattered whether other North Americans were concerned about this, and so this was a way of affording them some small degree, at least, of human rights protection. The history of the communities there is pretty dramatic. They were basically regarded by their government as a hostile population, the entire civilian population in many areas that were sympathetic to the FMLN, which was the opposition group at that time. And as such, they were basically subject to a lot of different kinds of the counterinsurgency tactics that range from just harassment and detention to the more gruesome stories of rape and exemplary assassinations and scorched earth military campaigns and even some fairly famous civilian massacres. And what that did...
Thousands of deaths.
And very hard to listen to stories. The one in our own region of Sister Cidid, catchment area in El Salvador, was the famous Rio Sumpul massacre in May of 1980, when 600, mostly children and women and older men and anyone else who was trying to flee, were basically gunned down in the river, something which is commemorated every year in these communities.
That was indeed part of the tactics of the government, was to have this warfare against civilians.
Right. It was pretty classic counterinsurgency techniques honed in Vietnam, the idea that the guerrillas were the fish and the civilians were the water in which they swam. And so this concept of draining the waters to catch the fish was implemented by the Salvadorans with tutelage of the U.S. military advisors. And so a lot of these communities were depopulated, basically, one way or another, and either internally as refugees or externally to refugee camps in Honduras. And one of the kind of the signal accomplishments of these communities is basically in the late 1980s and early mid and late 1980s, a lot of these communities basically decided to repopulate their homelands despite the ongoing presence of the same kind of military reprisals that had impelled them to leave. And they basically organized themselves as communities and put each other in each other's hands and went back. And this was partly helped by a number of religious and other kind of groups, including U.S. El Salvador Sister Cities, some of members of this organization at that time. Some of them accompanied these groups back to their repopulated areas. And so they are incredibly organized communities, the kind of which there really aren't even any analogs for in the United States. And that was their history during the war. And after the war, when the shooting wars are over, but they were still basically under a right-wing government, which persists today. In that government, there was no love lost between the communities and the government. They still basically have been treated with what you might just call malign neglect. These communities are essentially treated as invisible by the government, and they get very few government services, and there's a lot of hostility there. We were there, and I was there, for example, in 1994 during the first presidential elections held after the peace accords in 1992, and what was going on at the time was many of these communities were declared phantom communities by the central government, and as such, basically were denied the right to vote, because the line was that nobody lived there. There was no reason to have voting booths in these communities. And just to give you a sense of their collective organization, in response to that, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these people in these various communities basically got on flatbed trucks and drove to, at least they walked hours to get to trucks because there were no roads, and they got on flatbed trucks that were supplied to them, and they rode to the capital city, San Salvador, and presented themselves in the public plaza to make it plain that they were not ghosts, that they were not phantoms, and that they deserved the right to vote. And so that's their history, and it's pretty inspirational, and we've learned a lot from our relationship with them.
And the relationship has now changed from the war specifically now to the economic assault that people in those communities feel. And some of the delegations that Sister City has been involved with have focused particularly on these economic impacts and the organizing in that country that's going on around them. And the last one where you were learning about the gold mining problem was the MPR 12 movement building delegation. Can you talk a little bit about how the communities are organized there on the ground and how they've been able to address some of these economic and corporate policies that are affecting them?
Well, sure. The all of these communities are linked through an organization called CRIPTES, which translates to the Coordination of Rural Communities for the Development of El Salvador. And which is not a political party. It's a social organization that advocates and helps the communities advocate for their own rights and integrity. And Cryptes, in turn, is a member of a larger organization called the MPR-12, which is translates as the popular resistance movement of October 12th, the 12th in MPR-12, which is an important date in all through Latin America and not celebrated in quite the same way as it's celebrated in the United States. And this group basically has coordinated a lot of resistance activity against what they believe to be devastating, basically free trade policies, the MPR-12 specifically in El Salvador. While the shooting wars are over, there's still an economic war against the poor, they believe, and this has basically devastated the rural sector, and most of these communities are rural communities, in terms of prices of corn and their ability to make a living, and it's becoming really no longer possible based on a flood of imports from the United States and elsewhere. So free trade for these people basically means freedom to compete with very large and subsidized agricultural giants like Cargill, etc.
A report from Sebastian Dario in Chalatenango on March 2, 2006. Representatives from mining company attempt to enter community of Guajila. A car carrying representatives from the Canadian mining company O. Martinique Silver was stopped late Tuesday night as it tried to enter the CCR Cryptes community of Guajila. A large group of community members stopped the car, whereupon they demanded that the individuals identify themselves. When it became apparent that the car carried Martinique employees, members of the community told the miners to leave immediately. After a brief interchange between community representatives and the miners, the car headed back towards Los Ranchos without further incident. This is the third time since June, when Martinique was granted its exploration license, that community members have stopped the miners as they have attempted to enter and continue exploration work in the region, and the first time since the company was escorted out of the region in October that they have attempted to re-enter. While the company continues its exploration work on the adjacent Pentacol license, it has been unable to access the region of its Ojo Blanco license due to strong community resistance. Santiago Serrano, president of the CCR, stated yesterday that he learned about the possible return of the miners while in a meeting Tuesday afternoon in Guajila. Upon receiving the warning, he ran to the community radio station Radio Sampul to broadcast the alert to all the organized communities in the region, who have been preparing since October for a possible reappearance of the miners. After placing the announcement on Radio Sampul, Santiago went to the church, where he began ringing the bells continuously as an emergency call. Within minutes, there were a group of people gathering all along the main road that connects Los Ranchos with the mining exploration area. Simultaneously, people from the communities of Ignacio y Acuria, Las Limas, and San Jose Las Flores began to congregate, and Nueva Trinidad and Arcotao were put on alert. The communities originally became suspicious of renewed company activity when a large construction machine with military escort was reported having entered Chalatenango City on Tuesday. When community members and representatives from the CCR and Cordes were unable to verify the reason for the machine's appearance, initial alerts were sent out through the organized communities.
The MPR-12 and Cryptes and the communities, people in the communities themselves, regard a lot of these kinds of infrastructural projects that are now being proposed in El Salvador in terms of dams that might divert the river or certain electrical projects or the project we heard about when we were there most recently in October and November is a project for gold mining in these communities. It would be gold mining under the auspices of a Canadian mining company called O. Martinique Silver. The mining company has bought licenses from the national government to explore in these communities, and it was sold to them on the basis that even though the communities don't want to give permission for this, that while the villagers may own the topsoil, the subsoil and the rock beneath their lands is national property. So it's the same kind of true-to-form treatment that they've received for decades. However, these days, community consent matters, or has mattered in some places, and these communities are not giving it. What they have been doing is been resisting in the most strong way possible for them, and it has taken the form not only of community meetings and educating community members about it and escorting the unwelcome mining representatives out of their communities to basically what has been a national uproar and large-scale demonstrations throughout El Salvador, most recently in November, basically blocking the roads to major intersections and border crossings in the country to say that we don't want these projects violating our communities. They're very concerned specifically. The mining in question utilizes a cyanide extraction process that these targeted communities think will destroy their reforested land, it will pollute their water supply, it will ruin their agriculture, and basically make their communities uninhabitable sooner or later, because the kind of mining, it's a strip mining kind of scenario where you have to go through tons of material in order to procure ounces of precious metal.
A January 3, 2006 report by Sebastian Dario from San Salvador. During the last 2 weeks, the Chalatenango Anti-Mining Commission has sent representatives to two different sites in Honduras where mining companies are carrying out open-pit mining activities. According to Philippe Tobar, president of the community board in San Jose Las Flores, a group of leaders from different communities in Chalatenango visited Valle de Siria in Honduras, where a transnational mining company is carrying out mining operations. The delegation of Chalatecos was not permitted inside the fenced guarded mine, but observed the impacts of the mining project from the outside and talked to members of the relocation community. Community members explained how the mining company first displaced the community where the future mine was situated, building them in a relocation complex nearby. However, without their land to farm and clustered one house behind the next in the new relocation complex, the displaced are unable to maintain livestock or plant crops, surrounded by mining wasteland. The only jobs offered to the untrained village members is pick and shovel labor. As a result, the majority of a couple hundred jobs created by the company have gone to outsiders. Most recently, a busload of Chalatecos from the organized communities traveled to San Andreas, Honduras, where Vancouver-based Greenstone Resources LTD subsidiaries have been exploiting an open-pit mine for some years. Julio Tobar of the Municipal Council of Las Flores reports that the group posed as holiday travelers interested in mining development, and as such, the entire busload was allowed into the guarded complex. Mining engineers gave the group of roughly 45 people a tour of the entire mining operation. The notable omission during the tour was the cyanide pools, which the engineers claimed to be non-toxic, but at the same time refused to allow the visitors access without protective suits. The 15th of December, a group of community leaders and youth from Las Flores participated in an educational forum in San Salvador, where anti-mining activists from Guatemala, Honduras, Cabañas, and Chalatenango all shared their experiences of resistance to mining companies in their communities. Again, Dennis Chinoy with U.S. El Salvador Sister Cities. And when you say what's happening in these other communities throughout Latin America, it's not only the environmental impacts, but it's also the human rights abuses that are often visited upon people who are resisting these projects.
Right. Well, they're very resolute about it, and these are not militarized communities at this point. They're very, peaceable, beautiful people. But they are aware that when mining companies come in to places where they're unwelcome, they are often therefore accompanied by government security forces, and communities elsewhere have been hurt. There have been skirmishes, people have been wounded or killed in the name of security and property. And though that's something that they are very worried about. They said this, when we were there, they told us that this is the most worrisome thing that's happened to them since the war ended 14 years ago, and that's a tall statement given their experience.
Can you talk a little bit about the solidarity work you've been able to be working on with these sistering connections on the mining issue on both sides of the border?
Right. Well, Sister Cities traditionally is one of the things that it tries to be able to do is to, take cues from the activities and the principled work of the communities and not to do anything necessarily on their behalf or for them, but to try to project their voice to places where we might have access and they might not. And a couple of weeks ago, we learned that O. Martinique Silver Incorporated was having an annual shareholder meeting outside of Denver, Colorado, and we thought this would be a good opportunity to send a message to O. Martinique's investors, because even though the communities have been crystal clear about what they think about all this and their preparedness to resist. The company itself has issued some very sunny statements to its shareholders and to the public about what a lucrative and easy investment this is. They have a promotional PowerPoint that anyone can visit on the web that lets you know that El Salvador has, quote, has the lowest risk profile for investment in all of Central America, is ranked only slightly below Canada as a place to do business. That's a quote. And then it has what it calls a good neighbor program, which portrays the company as working hand-in-hand with the local communities to assure a partnership in economic development and good environmental stewardship. That's another quote, et cetera. It goes on. It's right through the looking glass, really, in terms of what's actually happening on the ground. And so we thought we would try to send a message in the form of proxies. We bought 100 shares of a couple of people. I was one of them, bought 100 shares of stock in the company for all of $20.50, but enough to, we thought, be eligible to attend the meeting. And we sent proxies in Denver who were willing to actually go to this meeting on short notice. What was very heartening and impressive to us is that while there are 20 U.S. El Salvador sister city communities around the country, none of them are in Denver. And so the idea was, how can we send this message and organize a small demonstration at the shareholders meeting without even having a presence there? One recent delegate on a PICA-organized, U.S. El Salvador sister city-organized delegation was in Denver, lived in Denver, and that was the seed of a start. And we were also able to get in touch with groups that were involved, not in Latin America solidarity, but in the anti-mining movement in general. As luck, I guess you could call it, would have it, there had just been a large demonstration the month before in Denver, against a different mining company called Newmont Mining, which is a very large mining company that has a history of running roughshod over community concerns in various places. And we were able to get in touch with these groups, and by phone and email and listserv, et cetera. And we found them very sympathetic and ready and willing and able to be helpful. And it was just in terms of being able to amplify a progressive movement throughout the country for various aims that harmonize with each other. This was an ability to link the El Salvador Latin American solidarity movement with the anti-mining movement in general.
A report from Chalatenango by Sebastian Dario, February 7th, 2006. CCR communities remove last traces of mining project. Early Saturday morning, members of the organized communities of the CCR spread out along the hilltops of northeastern Chalatenango to search out and remove evidence of the exploration work of the Martinique Mining Company. In groups of 5 to 8 people, members of the communities of San José Las Flores, Los Amates, San Isidore Labrador, Ignacio y La Quira, Las Limas, and Guajila combed the hillsides of the region, destroying or removing the markers the company uses to identify potential mineral veins. The hills of the region are littered with the markers the company left behind, evidence of its intention to continue its exploratory work. Each piece of marking tape is stamped with pattern of maps which represent the territory included in the Ojo Blanco exploration license the mining company was granted by the Ministry of the Economy. The orange marking tape is often found alongside a harder-to-find metal plaque, which includes a 4-digit number corresponding to the number written on the marking tape. The morning-long search turned up a bag full of marking tape and 21 company plaques interspersed with U.S.-made machine gun cartridges, which date from the war years, a vivid reminder of past unwanted visitors. The company had also painted 4-digit numbers on tree trunks and rocks which members of the communities destroyed. We spoke with one of the designated proxies on the day of the demonstration at the shareholders' meeting in Colorado. Glenn Morris is on the Leadership Council of the American Indian Movement of Colorado, is a professor of political science at the University of Colorado in Denver, and is part of the Stop Newmont Mining campaign. Today you went as a proxy to the shareholders' meeting, O Martinique, attempting to go in to speak on behalf of people from El Salvador and questioning O Martinique about their mining projects and intentions for El Salvador. Can you just talk about today, set up what it was that you were trying to do and what happened?
Sure.
sure. Well, frankly, we in the Denver area knew very little about Martinique until about 3 or 4 weeks ago when we were contacted by Dennis Chinoy. And the American Indian Movement of Colorado is part of a broader coalition, the Stop Newmont Coalition, as well as the All Nations Alliance. And Dennis contacted us because we had organized an action against Newmont Mining Corporation on April 25th at their annual shareholders meeting. And we had received some national publicity around that action. And so Dennis and his organization, Peace Through Inter-American Community Action, as well as U.S. El Salvador Sister Cities program, contacted us to see if we would be willing and available to publicize some of the issues around Old Martinique in El Salvador. And, of course, once we heard the details of what was going on in El Salvador, we vigorously endorsed the action and began to mobilize in Denver as well as we could on short notice, and then decided to go to the annual general meeting today. And Dennis then sent us a couple of proxies for the shareholders meeting, which we tried to use today. So we went down, there were several people who went to picket the event, which was located outside of Denver in Morrison, Colorado. And we set up a picket across from the shareholders meeting, and a couple of us with proxies tried to enter the meeting.
Proxies are when someone who has bought shares in the company then gives over their authority to stand in for them at the meeting?
That's correct. And so we were potentially authorized agents of Dennis to go into the meeting and represent his shares of this publicly held corporation at the shareholders meeting. When we attempted to go into the meeting, Jeff Klinda, who is the chair of the board for Old Martinique, challenged our proxies and on technical grounds said that they were not in order, that we didn't have the appropriate proxy form, and that the stock was purchased too late in the year to be legitimate. And so, of course, we objected to that and are exploring the option of filing a complaint with the Securities and Exchange Commission. We really believe that it was short-sighted of Old Martinique to deny us the opportunity to speak at the meeting because it presents the appearance that they have something to hide with what they're doing in El Salvador and that they weren't interested in alternative voices, particularly from shareholders being expressed at their meeting.
You were able to interact directly with the chair of the board, or you just knew that these were his orders?
Oh, no, we interacted directly at the door of the meeting, and while the secretaries were checking our credentials and, in fact, calling Canada to see if they were appropriate, Mr. Clinton made an executive decision to have us ejected from the building by the security.
Was there any discussion of the issue at hand that both knew was the reason you were entering?
There wasn't specific discussion about that. We asked them if there were issues that they wanted to conceal from public discussion or what kinds of things they were hiding or afraid of discussing in the shareholders meeting, and they chose not to discuss those issues.
And you were coming in with a question for the company as a shareholder and were not able to ask that question. What was that question?
Actually, we had a couple of questions because we had two proxies, and one of the questions revolved around whether or not the company was being transparent in its communication with its shareholders about the potential sources of conflict with Old Martinique's operations in El Salvador, and whether or not the company was fully disclosing to shareholders the level of opposition to its operations in Chalatenango and other communities in El Salvador. The second question was more specific about, because this is something that we faced with the Newmont mining action in Denver.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a question that I've been involved with regard to indigenous peoples. And there have been a number of decisions at the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights through the Organization of American States, as well as with the Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination at the United Nations, where transnational corporations work in collusion with states in violation of the human rights of local communities. And some of these cases have been successfully taken to the international arena, and some very positive decisions have been handed down to put corporations on notice that simply because they're working in collusion with a government like El Salvador, or in the case of the Western Shoshones in the United States, that the company may itself be exposing itself to liability, and shareholders have a right to know that. And so that was, you know, those two questions were the ones that we were going to pose to the board.
Talk a little bit more about some of the mining issues that you are more familiar with, because this is a big issue for many communities around the globe, and it's just coming more to the surface now.
Well, certainly, and particularly the issues around gold mining, where very toxic chemicals are being used, cyanide, arsenic, cadmium, that leach into the groundwater of local communities, that poison drinking water supplies and prevent communities from being able to engage in subsistence agriculture. In addition to that, as was the case with Newmont in Peru and is now the case with Barrick Gold Mining Corporation in Nevada, sacred sites, ancient, very important sites for indigenous peoples are being threatened by these operations. So when we were contacted about this case of Old Martinique, in El Salvador, it had all of the trademark kind of characteristics of some of these transnational operations. In the case of Newmont in Indonesia, both the civil and criminal action was brought against the corporation and its officers because of the toxic pollution that it dumped in Buya Bay, affecting indigenous communities there. In our research about Newmont, we found that on every continent but Antarctica, Newmont was operating on the lands of indigenous peoples, and the impacts were dramatic in all of those instances.
Can you talk a little bit about the solidarity of different organizations from different parts of the globe, but now even within the country, working together to offer up resistance against this?
Well, that's why we were very encouraged when we were contacted by Dennis up there in Maine, because we are able to utilize some technologies to mobilize globally in a very effective way. So when we have heard about the determined resistance of communities in El Salvador and spokespeople like Esperanza Ortega or Santiago Serrano talking about how the resolve of the people to defend their land. And these are communities that have been devastated by years of war and still have the will to stand up to unjust decisions by the state or in collusion with transnational corporations. We felt that the least that we can do in Denver, Colorado, is to stand in solidarity with them and try to amplify their voice at the shareholders meeting. And so we believe that this international network of solidarity around some of these issues is growing, is strengthening, and we're proud to be part of that.
Any other issues that you would like to add to this at this point?
Well, I do think that it's important for people, whether they're in Maine or El Salvador or Colorado, for us to stand in solidarity, to join arms and stand for issues of social justice, indigenous people's rights, environmental protection, wherever these issues might arise. And so hopefully the next time that we have a Newmont action in Denver, or that the Sister Cities Project needs support from us, or that the people in Ghana or the people in Indonesia need our support, we can coordinate and consolidate our our voices and our power wherever that might be. And we look forward to an ongoing relationship with the people of Maine and as well as the people of El Salvador around this issue. And we told the shareholders and the directors and officers at O Martinique that this is not the last that they're going to hear from us. And if they continue to engage in their operations in El Salvador, that we intend to be back next year with proxies that they can't challenge, and that we intend to again amplify the voice of the communities who are in active struggle against the policies of O Martinique in El Salvador.
Thank you very much for talking with us today, Glenn Morris with the American Indian Movement and the Stop Newmont Movement in Colorado.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure.
Al Geddix is a professor of sociology at the University of Wisconsin in La Crosse. He is the author of the book Resource Rebels, Native Challenges to Mining and Oil Corporations. He has worked with Indian tribes in Wisconsin and around the world in resisting unwanted mining projects. He is the director of the Center for Alternative Mining Development Policy, started in 1977. Al Geddix is on the U.S. El Salvador Sister Cities Gold Mining Committee. First, because of your extensive work, talk about the larger context of the gold mining industry around the globe, how it affects the environment, human rights, and other community impacts.
Okay, the gold mining industry is one of the most destructive parts of the international mining industry, largely because of the technology which was developed in the 1970s and 1980s, where cyanide, which is highly poisonous to both the environment and human beings, was used as a way of extracting large amounts of gold, actually small amounts of gold, from very large amounts of rock or ore. And the way that was done was by blasting, crushing, excavating, creating these huge open pits in different parts of the world where gold was identified as a major resource. And cyanide was used as a way of distilling or leaching out the usable gold particles out of these vast amounts of waste rock, which created a number of problems for the local communities. First of all, it created these massive open craters that frequently required the removal of populations and towns that were in the vicinity of these mining projects. It also created large amounts of waste. Average wedding ring, gold wedding ring, produces about 20 tons of mine waste for a single wedding ring. And so what you have in many of these countries are permanent waste disposal areas called tailings management areas, which are composed of the waste left over after the gold is extracted, and the cyanide mix that is left in the waste material is left out in these open areas where the cyanide leaches out into the groundwater, and also the other heavy metals. There's something like 25 heavy metals that are left in the waste material also leach out in the process known as acid mine drainage. And there are chemicals in the waste material that produce an acidic reaction known in the industry as acid mine drainage. And that produces sulfuric acid, and it also produces or liquefies, actually, other heavy metals which get into the soils and the water and are poisonous to fish and other aquatic organisms at parts per million and parts per billion. And wherever this type of mining has occurred, where you have base metals that are mixed with sulfide minerals, which are the minerals that produce the acid generation, you have essentially biological dead zones that are produced after the mining is done. And so in just in the United States, we have large portions of the western United States which have been affected by acid mine drainage, in which the areas that were the site of mining activities have produced biologically dead zones where there's no fish life, there's no plant life, and there's no possibility of vegetation, because those poisons in the form of heavy metals are now part of the environment. And this is occurring on a large scale because the types of deposits that these multinational mining companies are going after are not very rich deposits in terms of the the quantity of the metal in the ore. They're very low-grade deposits, which means that in order to make a profit off these low-grade deposits, you have to mine very large quantities of rock, use very intensive chemical processes that include cyanide, and what you end up with is a devastating landscape, not to mention the fact that you have the people that are in these delicate ecosystems in many parts of the world, some of the last remaining intact ecosystems that are now being frontally assaulted by the chemical residues in these mining operations. And of course, once it becomes clear to these communities, a major portion of which are indigenous or native communities, once it becomes clear what the nature of these activities are that produce these large waste piles and excavated landscapes, a lot of communities begin to organize against these projects. And what happens then is that environmental opposition becomes inseparable from human rights violations, because you have multinational mining companies that are backed by local governments and by international financial institutions like the World Bank that are then funneling money into equipping private security forces that are employed by the mining companies to target local opposition in communities where they're operations are being opposed. And once you have these private security forces operating, you have essentially the beginnings of counterinsurgency operations in many parts of the world, where peaceful communities that are nonviolently opposing mining projects are targeted by heavily armed paramilitary groups or private security forces that produce detentions, disappearances, torture, and assassinations as a way of doing business in many parts of the world.
Let's speak of the El Salvadorian case specifically, the potential harm, the company's tactics in this case, and the organized community resistance.
Well, in the case of the gold exploration in northern El Salvador, and particularly in Chalatenango, we have a number of potential mining projects, not just one or two, but a whole series of them, because the area where the company is exploring has been identified as a Central American gold belt, which extends from Guatemala through Honduras, through El Salvador, and into Costa Rica as well. And so there are, you know, something like 40 or 50 companies in those countries that are actively exploring gold prospects. And so we're talking about a gold mining district, which means the displacement of large amounts of traditional landowners because of the amount of land that would be required to be disturbed and disrupted by mining activity. It would require displacement of entire communities which are sitting on or immediately adjacent to gold mining deposits. And for the people that would not be immediately displaced by the mining activity, you have the problem of the contamination of the water supply and the diversion of the water supply for gold mining activity. Gold mining, in addition to producing toxic materials that get into the local environment from cyanide and from heavy metals, you also have a drawdown in the local water supply, because gold mining is a very water-intensive as well as an energy-intensive activity. And in places where other gold mining companies have already conducted their activities, for instance, in Honduras and Guatemala, the Guaymas Gold Mining Company in Honduras has already resulted in a drawdown in the local water supply, so that farmers and people that depend on the wells for their drinking water, those wells are drying up because of the diversion of water into the mining activities.
Isabel Membreño is on the board of the CCR, the Association of Communities for the Development of Chalatenango, one of many associations of organized rural communities in El Salvador. It was originally formed in coordination with the FMLN during the war to accompany displaced communities under directed assault by the military. After the war, the CCR has coordinated relocation and rebuilding and organizes resources and local infrastructure projects. The highly participatory organization of rural communities also is active politically in issues affecting the daily lives of local people. They are mobilized against gold mining through educational campaigns, civic participation, and direct action. We spoke with Isabel Membreño last week by phone. First, if he can talk about how people in the community first discovered mining was coming to your area and what the reaction was of people in the communities he is in connection with.
A mediaciones del año pasado empezamos a escuchar rumores y a ver movimientos de personas extrañas aquí en la región.
So we started realizing there were minds in this area about the middle of last year when there started to be rumors and movement of people we didn't know in the region. And quickly we found out that they were doing a study or an investigation of the region looking for mines and the possibility of mineral wealth. We understood that they had people who they were paying or essentially blackmailing to be looking for this richness and convincing other leaders that there was great wealth in this area. We quickly began to investigate what mining was all about, talking with people in Guatemala, and we realized that this was a trick, that this wasn't true, that there was going to bring us development, that it was going to bring us wealth, that it was going to bring us other things instead.
Como te digo, a raíz de eso también comenzamos a llamar pues asambleas con líderes por diferentes regiones.
After this investigation, we began to call assemblies with leaders of the region to be able to start analyzing this threat. And we all began to agree that this was a giant threat to our natural resources and that this was a project that was going to come to finish us off and to finish off our future generations of young people, that it was going to bring great contamination, that it was going to bring sickness, with all the chemical pollution that it was going to cause, that our water would be polluted, that our ecosystem would be polluted. And so we consider this death for our people and for animals. And because of this, we are convinced and we are going to fight to say no to mining. We will not permit mining exploitation in this region. And people know what mining exploitation means, that it's highly, highly polluting. And so because of that, we have been carrying out a daily and nightly campaign. We have activities every day and into the night against mining because we will not let it happen here. And we are convinced of that, and we're going to stop it any way we can. We feel that they have declared war on us, and we will use our own arms, which is social organization and struggle to stop it.
Por otro lado, quisiera compartir algunas actividades que hemos realizado.
We've carried out a series of events since these assemblies of events, local events, departmental events, and national events to educate and fight the mining project. On the 23rd of March, in the city of Chalatenango, we carried out a hunger fast, a week-long hunger fast, not just against mining, but against the entire system that is in the impunity of that system. We've also carried out activities confronting the mining company directly. Just last week, we had a week of activities against mines on the national level, and it culminated on the 18th of June in a forum in San Jose de las Flores, in which about 500 people agreed to support a declaration against mining, declaring our position against the company and against mining projects in this region. It's important to remember that Chalatenango is a department that's bathed in blood. There have been so many deaths of leaders in this department in the last years because of a war, and we will not let this situation of violence and of oppression of our people return to this region. There have been so many deaths, so many injured, so many women and children killed, that we will not allow more militarization of this region because of mining, and that a mining company come to take our land away from us.
Chalatenango está bañado con sangre. Hay muertes de por medio para conquistar este territorio.
And despite the fact that they are continuing to threaten us with this mining project that they say will bring development, we are firm and convinced that this will not happen.
I just wanted to know if he wanted to detail any more about the popular education and outreach as well as the actions. And I know part of this has been the mayor's declarations and the letter to the assembly and the outreach they've done to other countries. Within this context of the fact that this area of El Salvador has the kind of community organization that was established during and after the war, if he wants to talk about how that mobilization and education has worked within that context.
En primer lugar, nosotros aquí en Chalatenango es un departamento histórico.
First is to say that this is a historic department, and not just because of the armed conflict, but also because of the grassroots organization that has historically taken place here. Chalatenango is full of natural leaders, and since the 1970s and 80s, people have been organizing on the grassroots level to resist. And this is all based on the ability to have real grassroots debates and discussions, that both strengthens and enriches our communities. And to say that as well that the leaders here aren't interested in personal gains, they're interested in communal gains and in making sure that the community is first, and not just the leaders, but the entire population. And so at the level of the entire department, they have created a commission against mining that is the organism that mobilizes people around the department against mining and to resist the mining. Also, at the community level, all the communities are on alert, ready to act in case any suspicious activity were to take place in the community, be it people exploring for mines, be it people trying to blackmail or convince community leaders to allow mining to enter into the community. So the local communities are ready to act and active to stop miners if they try to enter, and at the same time are ready to coordinate with the departmental authorities as well as national authorities to make it a real national response if need be. To say that money isn't the most important factor here. The most important factor is that we have a base, that we have a grassroots network. It's not just the board of the CCR, it's not just the CCR, it's all the people in Chalatenango, all the leaders of Chalatenango who are working together with clear conviction in their struggle to stop this. And so despite the fact that the mining company is offering money to landowners in areas where they think there might be mines, trying to buy up land so that they will have access to these lands and to these minerals, we are working every day with property owners of the region, and nobody has sold their land yet because we're convinced that this will be a bad thing for the department. I'd also say that at the departmental level, we're organizing on many different levels. We have a secretary of women, a secretary of youth, a secretary of health, a secretary of organization, and all these different structures work together in a unified way. We also have a series of political schools, which are schools for leaders in the communities to have a space where we can come together and talk about the national reality and the social reality and what we can do when confronted with these realities. Yesterday, we had a meeting in Guajira, and we were talking not just about mines, but about all the different problems that we have right now in our country. The fact that the government is currently converting itself into an authoritarian regimen that is essentially a civilian dictatorship, and this dictatorship is rolling back all the achievements that we had come to with the peace accords, achievements that we'd achieved in terms of public order, in terms of the police force, that they've been rolling all this back. Now there's other problems as well. They raised the price of energy, the price of the urban costs of living are on the rise, and what that means is that our population suffers more every day. So we need to be thinking together about alternatives for our own survival, alternatives to this model, which is becoming a continental model. El Salvador is becoming an example in the entire continent of neoliberal policies, and where our government is trying to sell El Salvador as the model nation, as the perfect place to come for giant businesses. And that's not true. That's not what we want.
Can he talk a little bit about how the company, O Martinique, has been conducting themselves and how they've tried to portray themselves or their projects as being sustainable and having community support and trying to make it look good for investors?
Firstly,
to say that O Martinique is a Canadian mining company, and what it has been doing, the work it's been doing in the community, is trying to persuade especially property owners that they should sell their land, also persuading municipal councils and community leaders that mining is a good thing, that it will bring development. But we're really clear that this isn't true. By mining well, they only leave 1% of their profits in the country. 99% they take away. But that's not the worst of it. The worst of it is all the contamination and destruction they leave behind. In terms of the image of Martinique, they're in the press constantly talking about the benefits of mining, about the development it will bring, and they've even been offering small projects to different communities, to different leaders, up to $5,000. Saying, trying to convince leaders based on economic necessity, saying, we'll build you this if you allow mining. But at the level of the CCR, we're very satisfied that communities have been routinely rejecting these projects, and we even think that our organization has become stronger because the mining company is here. The people are uniting to resist it.
Por último, ¿qué es lo que sabemos de Martinique? Que es mentira que ellos son los ejecutores de determinada explotación de una mina. Ellos solamente.
The thing to say about Martinique is this company is just here to carry out the studies, the exploration studies, to see if there are actually mines in this region, if there are precious minerals in the region. They don't actually carry out the exploitation. What they do is then sell the rights to some other company, some other North American company that will come and bring the machinery and exploit the mines in the region. And so what that makes us think is all these offers that they're making to us about development, the offers they're making in terms of projects that will support the communities, all these offers are just lies, because they're going to leave and let some other company come in and just exploit the region. We also know that people were present at the meeting in Denver, the stockholders meeting in Denver, and that the company once again showed its real face and showed that it wasn't really interested in our community, despite the fact that here it says that it wants to support the communities with projects and whatnot. The other thing to point out about Martinique is Martinique is working within a system of free trade and taking advantage of that system to be able to come to this country, take the water it wants, take the natural resources it wants, and leave once they're done with the project, leaving contamination.
If you could comment on this mega project model, which also includes dams, other so-called development projects that may fit into the Plan Pueblo Panama in the region, and how, particularly as someone who's working within the CCR, how that is incompatible with the area's people and what they're considering to be good economic development.
No, pues nosotros consideramos de que todo el paquete, vamos a decir, de los megaproyectos que en Chalatenango.
Firstly, that we consider that these giant mega projects are not just a problem for Chalatenango, but the entire northern zone of the country, with Millennium Funds projects. They say they will build a giant highway through the entire northern section of the country, the longitudinal highway. And the idea of this highway isn't to benefit communities, isn't to facilitate transportation in the communities. It is to pass products of the giant transnational companies through our country to other countries. So what it will bring is destruction along the entire route of this highway, not development, as they say. Certainly not development for our people. Another one of these giant, part of this giant project, mega project, is the hydroelectric dam, El Cimarrón. Which would relocate many farmers from their region because they will flood a giant valley, essentially, to build this hydroelectric dam. The problem with all these giant projects is that they don't bring human development. They don't bring development for our people. They only bring economic development for big business. They make the rich richer, and they make us the poor poorer. So these free trade policies are only designed by the richest companies who are only thinking of big business. They're not thinking about communities. They're not thinking about poor and how to bring real development for poor people.
Comment on the importance of international solidarity and international action.
No, nosotros estamos convencidos de que la solidaridad de los pueblos es algo determinante para alcanzar nuestro objetivo.
We are convinced that people in solidarity is the way that we will bring about change in the world. In this sense, the people of the United States have always been on our side in the support, not just during the war, of the resistance of the people of Chalatenango, but also displaced after the war, in this struggle of mutual solidarity in our attempts to achieve a different world. We know that the press here is controlled by giant economic interests, that it isn't controlled by the people, and so that's why it's really important that we work together in different alternative mediums of the press so that we can also tell our side of the story. This is a broad struggle. This is a struggle not just about Chalatecos, but about all of America and our hopes for a different sort of America. It's a struggle of poor people against these giant projects that don't bring benefits for any of us. So in the name of the communities of Chalatenango, I'd like to thank you, the people of the United States, for this support, for this struggle and solidarity that we have, and I think together that we can overcome these difficulties.
For information, articles, documents, and actions concerning gold mining in El Salvador, you can visit the website pica.ws. That's PICA.WS, or call locally 207-947-4203. This is Meredith DeFrancesco. You have been listening to an extra edition of Radioactive.